My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Imagine this scenario. You come from a long line of physicians. You follow the family tradition, study medicine, and practice for 20 years. But something is missing. Something does not feel right. Something does not feel good about what you are doing and the way you are doing it. You take a leave from your practice, a leap of faith, and venture out to find a different approach to healing those you are called to work with, and ultimately healing yourself. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman, actually lived this story. Sarah is a fourth-generation physician turned shamanic healer and life coach who enjoys deep shenanigans. She's a frequent blogger at Maria Shriver's site for Architects of Change and has led sold-out retreats combining surfing and shamanism in Hawaii and a sacred pachydermal pilgrimage to Thailand. She loves to help others find their feel-good so they can live courageously and enthusiastically. Her website is followyourfeelgood.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her book, Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. Welcome to Destination Unlimited, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman. Good evening, Sarah.
Thank you, Victor. Good evening to you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So you have a very fascinating story. First of all, how many doctors were in your lineage, in your family?
My grandfather, my great-grandfather, and my father. So I'm sort of the fourth one in line, at least that we know of. You know, before that, maybe, I don't know, but that's as much as we know.
And did they have specialties? Were they general practitioners?
Yes, my great-grandfather was a general practitioner. My grandfather was a psychiatrist, and my father was a dermatologist. And in that, you can almost see the history of medicine, where we've gone from general to more specific and now super specialized, you know.
Now, was there an expectation for you to become a physician?
I don't think so. My parents always encouraged me to, you know, to do whatever I want, but they were certainly, I know they were certainly excited when I kind of declared that I was interested in that as a possibility.
And what was your childhood like growing up in that environment?
Well, my dad loved what he did. And he, you know, in the 70s and, you know, before there was a lot of regulation, things like that, once in a while he would take me into the office. I mean, I would see a few patients with him. He took me on a medical mission a couple times to Honduras in my young teenage years. So I really got a taste of what it was like to work with people and to be, you know, to feel useful in that way, you know, when people are sick or, you know, just needing help. And so I really connected. My dad was just really passionate about what he did. So I think that felt really good to me. I thought, this might be a good path for me.
At the time, did the concept of healing per se, was that part of your consciousness?
No, definitely not. I mean, I think at that when I was, you know, thinking about medicine, I think part of it was just being like, okay, my dad is really happy. He also seems to be sort of a leader, you know, it seems to have some sort of power in the world, you know, from a young, you know, teenager's perspective. And I think I was interested in helping people and connecting like he did. And I also wanted to sort of be in charge of my own destiny. There was definitely a desire for independence, you know, and I thought, well, if I become a doctor, then I will be independent because I'll be able to make my own choices and nobody can kind of tell me what to do. I mean, that was my sort of immature, you know, growing up sort of mentality about it.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the trip to Honduras. Were you exposed to anything down there that may have led to your future life endeavors?
Definitely. It was a very humbling experience, you know, because we would drive out into these remote villages and there would be lines of people when we would arrive there, like in the morning for a day's clinic. And I remember being like astonished that this was the situation, that they didn't have a doctor regularly. So unless we came, there wasn't going to be a doctor. And there would be people that had, you know, conditions that in our country would have been, you know, treated early on, at least at that point. Right now, we may be in a situation that's different. But, you know, for example, I remember like a child who had fluid on the brain, hydrocephalus, and it had gotten to such a degree that was extremely severe, something that you would never see like in our country. Because it would have been drained and cared for and that kind of thing. But just that, what can happen when you don't have access to medical care? And so that part was just like, I was humbled and realized that, wow, how fortunate I am and how fortunate we are to live here.
Absolutely. Now, what was your specialty? Did you have a specialty?
Yes. So my specialty turned out to be pathology, which is really, you know, we're considered the consultant or the doctor's doctor. We sit in a microscope and are diagnosing disease under the microscope. So I didn't have direct patient access. And I talk about in the book how I ended up in that specialty. Well, I was on a rotation in medical school, and my resident and I went to attend to one of our patients who was a young woman who had metastatic breast cancer. And I remember just standing at the foot of her bed, and she had an extremely low platelet level, which meant, you know, she was really teetering between life and death, because platelets, sometimes people get to a point where they're unresponsive or non-responsive to platelet transfusions. So there's nothing you can do except wait and keep transfusing platelets and hope they ride it out after having a heavy chemotherapy dose like she had had. And I remember feeling so helpless because we were offering her platelets, but I started to worry that and wonder, was anybody talking to her about the fact that she might die? And it seemed to me we were kind of missing, like we weren't addressing this very, very significant part of her, but I felt really lost as to, well, that wasn't what we were there to do, and how would I ever be able to help somebody with that? That's not our job in medicine. And so it was very confusing and ultimately led me to decide that unless I could be the kind of doctor who could address those kinds of things, kind of the spiritual aspect, although I couldn't put that to words, I decided to go into pathology, which was a place where I knew I could really help, and I could be very good at what I was doing and serve people in a different way.
So as a pathologist, there is something obviously in your practice after all those years that was missing. What was missing for you?
What was missing was, I believe, you know, addressing things at the soul level for a patient, and longing to help somebody on that level. But yet I knew I was in no condition to do that. So it was sort of knowing that I needed to be healed myself. But I didn't know how to do that. And also just longing to help other people to find that wholeness or that comfort somehow at the level of the soul.
You said you went from physician to healer. How do you differentiate between being a physician, a doctor, and being a healer?
Yeah. Well, I think we need all of the modalities. I believe we need traditional medicine, and I believe we need these other things like shamanism, or the things we'll probably get into. And what I do now is I feel like I work with people at the spiritual level of whatever is going on with them, whether they have an illness or something else that's disrupting their life. And, you know, I've just recognized that there is a spiritual underpinning to everything that's going on with us. And sometimes that to repair that spiritual or to restore that spirit to a person can lead to health or can lead to joy and peace when somebody's struggling.
So, Sarah, you worked all of those years as a pathologist, and then something happened to say, this is not working for me. What was that event?
You know, there wasn't like a single event. I would say it was more of an accumulation of things happening where I just started to feel like somehow this, what I'm doing anymore, or what I'm doing is just no longer feeling good. And I describe in the book where I'm sitting in our breast care conference where we would present all the new diagnoses of breast cancer and the patients and talk about them. And I remember feeling like, I wonder if we devoted all, what would happen if we devoted all this time to helping, well, I'll give an example. They were describing a patient who had no support. She had a husband who was, you know, not supportive of bringing her to her care, was abusive. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what would have happened if we had somehow circled the wagons around this woman 20 years ago, 10 years ago, before she stepped into a relationship with this person? Would it have somehow impacted her health now? And I didn't know the answer to that question, but it started to make me wonder, what if we devoted this much energy and this much focus on figuring, you know, helping people to have well-being, community, love, support, good food, you know, all these things that really contribute to having a vital human. And so that was sort of when it started to bother me. I became less interested in all the details of the tumor, which was really my job, you know, to be, doing that work. And that was really hard, because as I became less interested in that and more interested in these other concepts, like, you know, well-being, it became hard to do my job. And, you know, you don't want a pathologist who is disengaged while they're scanning your, 100,000 cells from your body looking for one or two malignant cells. You want that person to be very focused. So I realized I had a little problem. Like, I did not want anything, you know, I didn't want anything bad to happen because of my shift that was going on inside of me.
So in your mind, you were basically saying this science is wonderful, but we have to expand our approach to the patient. We have to look at them more holistically.
Basically, yeah.
And
absolutely.
Was this something that was sort of intuitive to you, or something that just sort of awakened in you?
I would say it was, how it presented was more confusion and, I was very worried, like maybe something was wrong with me, because it didn't seem to me that anybody else was having this awakening or this thought about, you know, at least not that I was aware of. So it was confusing. So I wouldn't call it, it didn't feel like an awakening. I mean, looking back, yeah, 5 years later, I could say that. But at the time, it just felt more like I was out of sync with everybody, and I worried like something was wrong with me.
My guest is Sarah Bamford-Seidelman. She's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. And we'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Sarah Bamford-Seidelman. She's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. So, Sarah, you started to have these doubts, and you had this sense that something was missing, that things were not right, that you couldn't bring to your patients everything you wanted to bring, and then there was something missing for you in terms of healing. So what happened?
So eventually I had heard about this crazy newfangled idea of a life coach. And I thought, well, I know I'm not depressed. I knew quite a bit about that because we had a lot of history of depression and some bipolar in my family. And so I thought, I'm going to try this life coaching thing. And through my life coach, which I talk about in the book, I really started to be able to enjoy work a little bit more, to be a little bit more functional in that space. And then eventually I was able to be willing to give myself some time to explore other things. So I started to, at first I went like 80% and then I went 60% at work. So I had a little more time to read and to also be with our four kids, because by that point my husband, who's also a physician, things were pretty bananas. We had four little kids, and so there was a lot of overwhelm going on, and that got alleviated a little bit by going, working a little bit less. And eventually I got so bold as to decide, I think I need some free time, like a sabbatical, to kind of just maybe step back and do some training in some of these modalities, like get trained as a life coach perhaps, and just see where that leads. And so that dream sort of triggered my husband and I to decide to downsize or right size our house. And I talk about that in the book. So we moved from this big, fancy, 6,000 square foot house that we had bought. I think one of the things we fell into was, that delayed gratification. And we thought, wow, if we get this big, beautiful house, then somehow we'll be happy. And of course, it was a big, beautiful house, but ultimately what we really realized is that we were longing for simplicity. So we downsized, and when we did that, I was able to take that sabbatical, which started out as 3 months. And after 3 months' time, I talk about in the book how so many wonderful things were happening. I called my section chair at the hospital and just said, what would you think about extending it for 3 more months? And he agreed that it was fine. They didn't, they were doing all right without me. And that's when, a lot more things just began to happen.
Let's talk about that for a second. I know there are a lot of people who are working in jobs and would love to venture out and explore their life and their options, and they feel afraid to do so because they feel, number one, either that if they left, they'd be disappointing the people they worked with, or number two, that their position wouldn't be there when they came back. What do you say to somebody like that?
Right. Yeah, I coach a lot of people that their biggest concern is either, somebody's going to be harmed in that process if they go after what they love, either the people they work with or their company or their family somehow. I encourage people at that point, when you're feeling that strong pull to leave or do something radically different, is just to find a way to open up some space for yourself to explore whatever it is. And that might mean, looking at whatever your current obligations are and shedding any obligations that aren't really serving, aren't feeling good to you in your body, don't excite you anymore. And if you can carve out a little bit of time, even a weekend, to go do a workshop and be with those people that you think, those are the people I want to hang out with, those are the kinds of things I want to be doing, and just see where it takes you. Because not everybody does what I did, which is, to completely leave my, your current job. Some people do that and they find out, oh my gosh, I can integrate this in my corporate job, and people are really excited. And even though you're scared, just, once you sort of say yes to that kind of hero's journey, that sort of call that's coming inside of you that's very uncomfortable, as soon as you say yes, I just tell people, magical things tend to happen and strange opportunities will come your way. Not that it'll always be easy, but, I think that's step one, is just to allow yourself to taste some of the things that you believe are going to really make you happy.
So it starts with a yes. It could be a big capital Y, or it could be a lowercase yes. Y, but it has to start with that yes.
Absolutely.
So you started with your yes, and your yes was a lowercase yes for the first 3 months, and then it became an uppercase yes,
for the next
3 months. And what happened?
So on the first 3 months, a lot of things happened. I always dreamed, what would it be like to be home with my kids? It's going to be so wonderful. I'll have my first summer where I can take them to the swimming pool and we can do things like all these other mothers had done for years. And I'd always been trapped in my little room staring at a microscope. And I realized, oh my gosh, like we had a beautiful summer and it was also extremely challenging. I mean, some of my teenagers were like, what are you doing home? Like we liked it when you were at work and we had babysitters. lots of other things. It was harder than I thought. But that summer I stumbled into a bookstore one day and this book sort of, you know, people talk about books falling off the shelf. This didn't exactly fall off the shelf, but it was next to a book I really loved. So I peeked at it. And it was Ted Anders' book, Animal Wisdom. Speak. I think I'm getting the name wrong. But anyway, it was Ted Anders' wonderful book.
Animal Speak.
And I thought, this is crazy. Like, what, you know, what is this idea that animals might have messages for us? But I decided to buy it for some reason. And that night, I was on a vacation. So that night in the hotel, I started flipping through it. And I was like, whoa, this is interesting. And then I thought, I think I must be crazy. Like, I'm really going off the deep end. And, you know, we had a lot of mental illness in my family. And there was a part of me that worried, like, that I was getting into some sort of magical thinking or some kind of strangeness. And it made me a little nervous. So, but that night, I don't know why, but I decided to go on Facebook and I just said, hey guys, if you ran into an animal this today and you're wondering what the message might be, I have this little book and I'm wondering if I could just, you know, if you want, I'll just put it in comments. And that night, Victor, it was like 120 people commented, and I didn't have that many friends. I mean, I had a few, but I was like, wow, like apparently I'm not the only one who's curious about this. So it gave me a lot of food for thought. I thought, wow, maybe I'm not so strange. Maybe this is something more universal or something, I don't know, but it was so much fun, like reading everybody's responses. And so shortly thereafter, and on that sabbatical, I was also doing a coach training program with the marvelous Martha Beck, who I highly recommend if you're thinking about doing life coach training. But I decided to launch a podcast about animal spirits and kind of how animals, you know, the messages of wild animals could change your life. And I did it for 2 years with another coach. And it just, that experience of people calling in and telling their incredible stories completely sort of proved to me that there is this other aspect of life that I had been missing out on and that I was completely unaware of. You know, this sort of, we're marinating in this world full of messages and spirit, but I didn't know. One of the most incredible stories, I was just telling somebody this last night, this woman called in and she talked about how when she was a little girl, age 4, her mother was a drug addict and she was being raised by her grandmother, who was a pretty serious alcoholic. So life was not easy for her. And she was 4 years old. And at night, these two enormous Clydesdale horses would come into her bedroom. And they would say, what would you like us to do? And she'd say to them, you need to sit down. And then they would sit down and she'd say, then they'd say, now what should we do? And she'd say, now you need to stand up and run around. And they would stand up and run around. And really what these horses, you know, in coming in spirit form gave her was this feeling of control and power, in a world where she obviously probably felt incredibly disempowered. And how those horses just stayed with her for her whole life. And it was just such a touching experience or touching story to hear about the power of these spirits to come and help those who are suffering.
Absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so eventually I realized there's so much, like, I want to know who's my animal spirit. I got really curious because when I started doing more reading about this, it turned out that most people have one spirit, at least one, that they work with over time in their life. And I call that like a core beastie. And I love the term beastie because it started to kind of encompass everything from a dragonfly to, you know, a unicorn, more mythical creatures, as well as, you know, lions and tigers and bears and everything else.
Oh my.
Oh my, exactly. And so I started getting curious. And what I realized is one of the traditional ways to find an animal spirit or your animal spirit is to go on a shamanic journey, which is where somebody plays a drum and that drumming, that particular type of drumming, alters your consciousness and you're able to access these worlds where these spirit animals dwell, who are filled with love and compassion. And so eventually I got the courage to, because it took quite a bit of courage for me anyway, to go on my first journey. And that's where I met my first spirit animal, who was not an elephant, but was a bear. And I talk about that experience in the book.
Now, let's stop for a second. You're a trained pathologist, a medical doctor.
Right.
You're a scientist. You're a scientist because that's what medicine is. It's medicine is science.
Yes.
And here you are dealing with shamanic journeying, dealing with spirit, dealing with all of these. Use the word magical thinking. Did you find yourself conflicted about this?
Absolutely. When I went on this first journey and met this mother bear, and it was the most beautiful and loving, compassionate experience I had had to date. I came back and I thought, wow, that was incredible. But then I thought, I think I'm maybe making this up because this can't be real. And this is, I don't know what's going on. I mean, this is so confusing. And I also didn't feel like I could talk to anybody about it. I mean, I talked to my husband a little bit about it. And we sort of, through both of our, reading, he had some understanding, not complete understanding, but was like open to it. But the thought of telling anybody else about it was just like horrifying. Because once again, I was just like, people are going to think I'm crazy. And eventually what I did was I kept returning to that bear on my own. I did it through a journey that was a recording that I found. And if somebody who's listening to this call is interested in discovering their spirit animal, they can go to my website and there's a recording there where I take you on a journey to go discover your core beastie or your spirit animal. But eventually I sought out a class because I was just so confused. Like, is this real or what is going on here? And is this okay? And, it was so comforting that I kept going back to her just to sort of hang out with her. But I was wondering, what is this all about?
Let's hold that thought because we're going to have to take a little break. My guest, Sarah Bamford Seidelman, she's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. Sarah, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
You can find the book at any of your independent bookstores. You can order it there, or you can find it online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, all those, the usual formats, the places where you can get books. And my website is followyourfeelgood.com. That four words, followyourfeelgood.com.
And we'll be back with more of Sarah and Swimming with Elephants after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio, every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. I came out in the 11th grade. Nobody was embracing you. The kids were cruel. It was very difficult to be gay. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
The hard part was determining that I was going to do it, but I definitely didn't do it alone.
At age 30, with the help of her mentor, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
I have a mentor, Maria. She convinced me to continue my education and to finish what I started to get my diploma. Just never judges. She's a true role model. If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, go get it. You can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening, Sarah Bamford Seidelman. She's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. So we were talking about your journey from hard science to soft science, to spirituality, your shamanic retreat into yourself, finding your spiritual animal, finding a bear, and you were talking about bringing her along with you, and what happened?
So when I went to this class, it helped me to get some more understanding of what shamanism was and what it wasn't. And that was incredibly helpful to me. I didn't feel quite as alone. So for anybody out there who's maybe having an experience, I think, you know, connecting with a community that is maybe going to be understanding and a teacher, somebody who can really guide you through these strange processes. Another thing that had happened that fall before I took the class was I had this kind of strange experience when I was out in the woods. I was sitting by this, kind of by this marsh in the woods near our house, and the grass had started to blow, and it was kind of blowing back and forth, and it felt like that grass blowing was kind of talking to me. And once again, Gary, I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, does this mean like the beginning of the end? Because I'd had, you know, relatives where I knew some of the things that happened to them, you know, as they went into a bipolar episode, for example, you know, started to have strange perceptions of things that none of us could see or none of us could experience. And so I started to worry. But it also kind of excited me. I thought, there's something going on here. Like, there's more to life and more to this experience than I was previously aware of. And again, I didn't really understand it, but I wanted to know more. So eventually, when the 6 months ended, I struck a deal with my partners that I would just come in when they were, you know, if they were got busy, they could call me in and I could come and work. So I sort of became like a casual pathologist, if there is such a thing. So I would go in periodically for a day or two to work at the hospital. And what happened was, as I would, you know, a month would roll by and they'd say, oh, we're busy, can you come Thursday, Friday? I'd say, sure. I would go in and I would get to work. And as I started like working at the microscope again, I think, oh my gosh, like I was such a shock. Like I couldn't believe that I had done that work as long as I had, because it was so out of sync with the way I was feeling now. Like it just felt so wrong to be there. It was really tortuous. So that was kind of my knowing that this was not something that was going to be sustainable and that I could return to. And I, that kind of scared me, but I also just realized it wasn't going to work. And I remember at one point putting out a prayer to the universe, like, if I'm not supposed to go back to this, show me the way, because my husband and I were like, you know, we were relying on my income for mortgage payment and also to help with, you know, sending kids to college, all that kind of stuff. It was the master plan. I was just supposed to keep working. And about a month later, after kind of making that prayer, that request, my husband got a raise in his salary, sort of unexpected, that was equivalent to my part-time salary, which was not, you know, it wasn't a massive amount of money, but it was significant. And it was almost to the dollar. And I thought, that's so strange. Like, we make this prayer, the universe answers. But then I, you know, and felt really good at first. But then a couple weeks later, I thought, oh, I can't trust this. Like, maybe I still should go back. And what I recognize is that within myself, I almost had this glass ceiling on how good I was willing to let my life get. Like, would I be willing to allow myself to explore this avenue that feels really good and it seems really promising or not?
Yeah, I think your experience is really important for our listeners and your readers to understand. You were going through an inner turmoil and actually starting to second guess yourself. What did that feel like?
Oh, it felt terrible. It just feels terrible, because what it meant was, I mean, if I was going to say yes to that voice that was saying, you can't trust this. You better be more careful. You better just, you know, knuckle under and go back to work. That's what everybody else is doing. And I mean, I looked around at the other doctors that I was working with, who are all amazing, incredible, awesome people. And I thought, well, none of them is like, I need a sabbatical, or, I need to look into something like healing, or you know, they weren't like deviating. They seemed so sure of themselves and that this was their life career. And so I questioned a lot. And that's where it was really helpful to have the support of, for example, my mother bear. And about this point, when things were really getting tough and I was questioning myself a lot, this elephant showed up, Alice, who I talk about in the book, and she was a spirit elephant. And really, she kind of showed me how to really let go and kind of, what did I have to lose? And, you know, that being myself was the best thing I could possibly be is just like the world would be so much better and so much more joyful if I could just let go and kind of let all of my wacky self out to play. You know, this part of me that is wanting to learn shamanism and that is in love with nature and these, you know, all these spirit animals that I've become, you know, aware of.
Why Alice and why an elephant?
Well, I guess that's part of the great mystery. It's really interesting, though, in the book I talk about how, so I met Alice, let's say, in 2011. About 3 or 4 years before that, when I was really miserable at work, I started to decoupage, which maybe the listeners know, you know, gluing images onto glass. And I was obsessed with it. And I would do it in my free time, even though I had no free time. But one of the images, there were a lot of animals that I was gluing onto glass. And that was very confusing and a very difficult phase because I had no idea why I was doing it, but I could not stop. It was an obsessional kind of activity. And one of the beasties that I was gluing onto glass was this beautiful Asian elephant. And it was almost as if Alice had been there all along, you know, but I wasn't conscious of who she was until she appeared in this shamanic journey. And I suddenly recognized that, you know, I'm like, are you that same elephant? And the answer was yes. And then she told me her name. And this all may sound so wacky to whoever's listening, but I could see anyway. And I think also elephants. So after that, as I always encourage anybody, if you have a beastie that's showing up repeatedly in your life, you know, learn a little bit more about them. Watch a PBS special about them. Watch, you know, stories about them on YouTube. And as I learned more and more about elephants, you know, I just became completely enamored with their enthusiasm and their emotions and their deep devotion to each other. They have this deep soulfulness. And I think... and this patience and this, compassion for each other. And so Alice became a huge teacher for me in that realm. And I had a lot of room to grow in those areas. You know, I was pretty unhappy, pretty cranky, pretty cynical in some ways when I took that sabbatical. And really, Alice helped me to understand a lot. And elephants in general just taught me a lot about who I was. Another story I tell in the book is we were in a friend of mine and I, which was another one of the amazing things that happened on that sabbatical, is I got invited to South Africa to negotiate a bride price with a friend, which that doesn't happen every day, right? This is what happens when you say yes to your hero's journey. But so anyway, we're in South Africa and this elephant, there's like a fruit at the top of this tree and this elephant's trying to get it because it's the last one and they love this kind of fruit and couldn't reach it. So finally the elephant just basically wraps its trunk around the tree and rips it out from the ground. And in this moment, and then he gets the fruit, of course. And in this moment, I realized, oh my gosh, you know, the elephant's process is a little messy and sometimes maybe even we might say destructive, but in the end, this elephant got what he wanted, which was this marula fruit. And that helped me to understand, like, at that point, I was being really creative, not only with decoupage, but a lot of things. And I was making messes all over the house. And my husband sometimes was just sort of like, oh, man, like, trying to be patient with me. And it just made it okay for me to have this messy, creative process, knowing that, yeah, I needed to clean up after myself. But this was just the way it was. If I was going to get where I wanted to go, I was going to have to kind of make some messes.
You know, it's fascinating to me that you were doing the decoupage and you were putting on these images that you really didn't understand why you were doing it. And back in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, us older folks used to call that treasure mapping, where you consciously would put images on to a background, a piece of oak tag or a piece of glass of things that you want to manifest for yourself in your life. But you were doing it naturally.
It's so funny. Yeah, like vision boarding almost.
Vision boarding, yeah, like, treasure mapping. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was so unconscious. I just thought, well, I'm making a beautiful tray now covered with sea creatures. I have no idea why I'm doing this. I think it's kind of pretty. And I went through the process of trying to like sell them other people. And that was so, such the wrong direction. And I always tell people when you go on your hero's journey, there's going to be moments where it just feels like utter failure. I remember returning home from a big city and I had sold a few of the things, but ultimately I just felt so downtrodden. Like people didn't understand what I was trying to do with these trays. And it felt like this is the wrong way. Like you're not meant to sell these. And,
so eventually I did stop making them. But basically now looking back, I feel like those were the animal spirits trying to come to me in the only way they really could. Because if they'd showed up as spirits, I mean, I probably would have had a psychotic break. And maybe that's what happens to some people. I talk about that too, that one of the things that shamanism gave me such a gift is that to understand the idea that in shamanism, we say like when somebody, you know, has a nervous breakdown, that person is undergoing an initiation. And if we can circle the wagons around them and give them love and support, and that person wants to become well again, that oftentimes they will be given a gift that they can then share with the community. And this was such a radical idea, but it helped me so much because also going through the book, I talk about during that time, my mother and my sister are both going through bipolar crises. And suddenly I have a new way to look at those. Not that, oh no, this is horrible. This is doomed. Mental illness is awful. It's a chronic condition. It's just going to ruin people's lives, which is kind of the viewpoint that, I mean, the worst case scenario viewpoint, I think, that our society holds. I suddenly saw them in a new light, that they were being initiated, you know, that they, and if we could love them, we could, you know, stand by them, and they wanted to get well, that, you know, maybe something miraculous could result from this. And that isn't to say, and I don't mean to discount psychiatry or, you know, drugs for depression, anxiety, and all those things. I just mean to say that there's also a spiritual aspect to these things that are going on.
Absolutely. My guest is Sarah Bamford Seidelman. She's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. We'll be back with more of Sarah after these words on the Olden Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Searching for a perspective beyond the mainstream? Check it out. Join your hosts Yelito Pasquale and Diana Gold Holland on Share International Radio for thought-provoking views behind the news. Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio. You can also find us at shareontheairradio.org. This may be the message of hope you've been waiting for.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it, and you can hear it repeatedly without feeling anything. But when we introduce a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural or inborn response from you. Save the food. Because 40% of all food in the US never gets eaten. Save the food. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening, Sarah Bamford Seidelman. She's the author of Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. So, Sarah, in the last segment, you were talking about using the shamanic aspects for looking at illness, looking at mental illness, and seeing it from a different light, that seeing people going through psychotic breaks, for example, is going through an initiation. For our listeners who are not familiar, who've heard the term shaman and shamanism, but are not familiar with a shaman, what does a shaman do?
So a shaman is that person, you know, this is sort of a global, all over the world is known, you know, there are shamans in Brazil and Norway and, you know, all over the planet. And typically the definition of a shaman is one who, a person, him or her, that alters their consciousness in order to have access to the spirit world where there is love and compassion. And they either use that access to bring back healing for an individual or for a community, or helpful information, so to guide people or guide a community towards resolution of whatever issue that they are experiencing. And so typically the way that people alter their consciousness all over the planet is using drums or rattles, so that repetitive sort of sonic driving. Other possible ways are through plant medicines and other more specialized things. But the most standard way is through drumming, and that is what I learned to do. And then shamanic healing, just kind of an overview of that, like if a person comes to a shaman for healing, typically that person is going to have an intention, maybe they want to be cured from an illness, maybe they want to heal their broken heart, or maybe they've been struggling with financial issues. It's basically, we're looking at whatever the spiritual aspect is that's underlying whatever the current problem is. And the shaman's going to go to their spirits and ask, you know, what does this person need? And then they're going to get a recommendation, or, you know, these are just some sort of an overview. And typically shamanic healing is restoring balance to an individual. Mm-hmm. So removing anything that doesn't belong in that person's spirit or that isn't serving that person, and then returning anything that has either been lost or bringing something in that is needed very badly right now for that person.
Absolutely. It's interesting that you mentioned the word balance, because I studied with a shaman many years ago. And one of the things that this gentleman was talking about was when they're in that shamanic state, looking at the surroundings and looking for energy that's out of balance, and then bringing balance to it using whatever methods they had.
Mm. Beautiful. And one of the most common kinds of healing that I see or that is needed is something called soul retrieval, which I talk about in the book. And that's just this idea that, you know, when we're conceived, we have, our soul is like a golden ball of light, you know, complete and present. And then over time, as we go through life, childhood, teenagehood, adulthood, we lose parts of ourselves, or we can lose parts of ourselves through different traumatic situations, through maybe we lose somebody that we're very close to that dies, and that person, because we're so closely connected, that person takes a little bit of our soul with them when they leave. Sometimes we give part of ourselves away to another person out of love and compassion for them, hoping that it will help them. And sometimes we bury parts of ourselves because we think or we believe mistakenly that it's going to help us, you know, keep our money, stay married, get the job we want, whatever it is that we're desperately wanting to, you know, hang on to.
Sorry, go ahead.
And so the soul retrieval process just restores those parts back to the person so they can have that power, personal power, to do what they came here to do.
Absolutely. Let's talk about swimming with elephants. What's that like?
Well, I talk in the book about how when I would journey with Alice, this elephant, I had this spirit elephant, she would take me often to see this herd in the spirit world, which was a very beautiful place to visit, where there were babies and aunties and grandpas and all these elephants, and just to be surrounded like that. And one day she took me to swim with them. And so we went into this, you know, it was like a big lake, I guess you would say, deep enough that an elephant could float in there. And it was so beautiful, you know, and very playful. And the elephants were, you know, using their trunks as water cannons. And just everybody was sort of, there was like an underwater ballet of the legs just churning the water, and it was just so this beautiful togetherness, and a real bliss and peacefulness of that connectedness, that community, but also being immersed in this cool and refreshing water. And that experience is, you know, sort of typical of, you know, shamanic experiences where we are shown through the spirits how, you know, what it looks like to be content, what it looks like to be peaceful. And it's our job really to go try to figure out how can I create that in my life here back on Earth, you know, to find that feeling again, or to do something, like maybe it's throwing a potluck, or, you know, calling all your friends and saying, let's go to the beach today, and frolicking a little bit and being playful like that and being loving like that.
What is there about the soul of the elephant that makes them so special?
That is a mysterious. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, and I suspect if we all might have different answers to that. But from my point of view, I think there's a wisdom that they have in themselves, and I think there's this, gosh, it's just so hard to put words to it, but there's a wisdom there that is something that we can learn from, and there's a communication and a sensitivity that they have that humans don't have. They have this ability to hear, you know, ultrasonic communications from each other over hundreds of miles of distance. And they have this tenderness and this, patience with each other, which is, I think, something that for sure I needed to learn to cultivate in myself. And certainly their life right now in the earthly reality, what's going on for actual elephants, not spirit elephants, but is the struggle for survival right now, because they're, you know, under attack, and their world is shrinking. The land that they have to roam on has been, shrinking and shrinking due to human, human decisions. But I think they're here to teach us, you know, at least some of us are particularly drawn to elephants. So whatever beastie you are drawn to, you know, speaking to all the listeners, that particular beastie, if one's been popping in your head as we're talking, probably has some beautiful lessons and things for you to consider. So I definitely invite people to explore that, and see what's there for them.
My personal experience with elephants has been relegated basically to visits to zoos, but getting close to them and looking into their eyes, there seems to be a really immense and deep wisdom present there.
Yes, like when Carl Jung went to Africa years ago and wrote about it in his diary, he noted that the tribes people there considered the elephants to be supreme, you know, to them. To humans. And you see that also in some Buddhist texts that, you know, that the elephant was considered the most supreme animal. And why that is, I can't say. It's just I have a perception that there, maybe it's a place that as humans we can all look to their example, and they inspire us through who they are and who they're being.
And in the Hindu tradition, Lord Ganesh has the head of the elephant and the body of the human.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and as I was saying yes to my own hero's journey, a friend who's an artist brought me over this thing that she had made, this beautiful image, and she's like, I looked this up because I'm not sure what I was even making, but it turns out it's this guy named Ganesh, you know, and I was like, wow, I've never heard of that. That's really interesting. And then we read about him together, and it turns out he's the Lord of New Beginnings. He is the remover of all obstacles. And that felt really incredibly magical.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that exactly the journey that you're talking about?
Yep.
Do you see yourself as a bridge between the realms of medicine and spirit?
I hope I can be. That's really my intention is. And I guess what my hope is that I can be a bridge between sort of people who are curious about these ways and not sure how to access these shamanic ways, and maybe feel like a normal, you know, suburban person who's got a regular job and doesn't feel like they're going to be somehow wants to be encouraged on this path and to discover their connection to nature and spirits. So that's kind of my aim, is just to invite regular people like myself, you know, into this journey if that's what they're interested in. because what I find is people just get the most magical help, and they begin to step on a path that's filled with love and compassion for themselves and for everyone around us. And I think that's what's so needed right now.
Absolutely.
In these tumultuous times.
Absolutely. What do you say to people who feel that call in their souls to do different or greater work in their life?
Well, I invite them, I invite them to connect with the spirit, you know, to discover a core beastie or a spirit in human form for them, because I said, you know, that this, it won't be an easy path. It'll be a really beautiful path. But you're going to need a lot of help and support along the way. And so one of the things that can really help you is having a kind of a spiritual team, as it were, to support you. And the other thing I tell them is that we also need our community, like our human team around us. So to, you know, connect with like-minded people, even if it's just one person you know you can talk to about what's going on with you, that is going to do so much for you. Just to get together for coffee once a week, or text and phone call, whatever you can do to kind of foster those connections. Because we don't do any of this alone.
Absolutely.
We don't make major things happen on our own.
What would you like readers to take away from Swimming with Elephants?
I hope that it leaves them inspired to say yes to whatever is calling them right now, and to have the courage to take one small step towards that, and then another, and then another. And also to open their eyes to the world of nature and spirits, and start listening to nature and see what it has to say to them. You know, there are stones and trees you walk by every day, and just take a little time and spend it with them, because they have a lot that they can teach us.
Her delightful book is called Swimming with Elephants, My Unexpected Pilgrimage from Physician to Healer. Sarah Bamford-Seidelman, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about this amazing work.
You can find me at followyourfeelgood.com, followyourfeelgood.com. And the book is available wherever books are sold, so your favorite indie bookstore. And you can also get it at Amazon and Kindle and Barnes & Noble online.
Thank you so much for joining us, sir. This is absolutely delightful. And readers, I got to tell you, listeners, this book is not only delightful, it's not only challenges you to look for your feel good in your life, but it's hilarious at points. Sarah is a very funny writer. So pick it up, read the book, and find your heart's desire. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Victor. It was a joy.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.